Welcome back for the first time in a long time. Here, Matt Minnick, joined by Michael Rogner, here for a summer edition of the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated podcast. Although I say Hoops Dedicated, we might be bringing another sport into this. We'll see. Start to talk a little bit more about some of the FSU alum that are hitting the links over on the Gulf, but still Hoops Dedicated. And it's been a while, Michael. How you been?
I'm doing good. I think the last time we talked, or last time we had a podcast, was probably the tournament, which is, but honestly, not that much has happened. You know, when it comes to Florida State basketball, there's been a lot of like watching nothing happen.
That's exactly right. A whole lot of hurry up and wait. I feel like we kind of kept saying, if this guy comes, maybe we'll hop on the podcast, and nobody ever came. And maybe that's a good. That's a good first subject. We'll get into the kind of the misses of the offseason and maybe giving a grade to this offseason. How successful was it? And maybe a little bit just about the roster construction in general. Of course, we've got the NBA draft coming up this week now. I think it's July 29th. Maybe today's the 25th. So it's coming up on Thursday. And of course, Florida State is going to be represented in the NBA draft once again. So we'll talk a little bit about that. That might lead into some 2022 recruiting conversation. So stick around for that if you want to hear about some of the future Seminoles that we might be looking to add. And then yes, I do think it would be cool to get into a little bit of, at least in the off season here, a little bit of golf conversation in. So if you are ready, what do you say we hit the off season here first? So it's July. It's late July. Kids are going to be going back to college pretty soon. Classes are, they're practicing already on campus, and classes will be starting up, fall classes, about, 3-4 weeks. Michael, what do you think just overall of the offseason in terms of, positive, success or maybe a failure when you're looking at the roster?
If we include the recruiting class, then, obviously the quote unquote off season was a huge success. But if we're just talking about transfers, we had that really early one with Caleb Mills, who mm-hmm. is, probably one of the better, more coveted players out there. And then we landed Cameron Fletcher, who's more of a physical specimen out of Kentucky. That's got a lot of work to do on his basketball game. And then, we had a lot of misses. It was Trey Mitchell and Kofi Coburn and all the other bigs that we went after.
Yeah, kick the tires again. It was just kind of
whiff after whiff after whiff. And
yeah.
And this is one of those things where, when Coach Hamilton retires, he always talks about the most rewarding part about coaching is having people call him on Father's Day or call him on his birthday. And when he says that, you can tell that he really means it. If Calipari or Krzyzewski said something like that, we just kind of laugh at them because they're obviously sociopaths, and this,
obviously
this miss after miss after miss is part. Yeah, I mean, we don't really need to debate that. The complete just whiffs on this is a little bit, I think, can be credited to, or the blame can go to Ham for focusing so much on intangibles and other things. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, but I think he lacks a little bit of that like sociopathic need to get to the Final Four. And I clearly, had we landed someone like Trey Mitchell, this team would have been, one of the boutique picks for making it to the Final Four. And now we're just kind of a fringe top 25 team.
Yeah. Fringe top 25. And it's interesting because I we've talked a lot of times about how the NCAA tournament, you just try to get there. And if you're anywhere in the really even seated as a top six or seven seed, I mean, you can get to the Final Four with a good draw. We see teams every year that they end up in the Sweet 16, they're playing some 12 seed, or they're in the Elite Eight playing a 9 seed or something. So you can get there. So from a ceiling standpoint, sure, I could envision a scenario where to Noren Gom in his second year with Stan Jones, just really takes a leap forward, and McLeod comes in and is better than expected. And Worley hits the ground running, and Raekwon Evans really just comes into his own. And, you know, I can envision some of the, you know, Polite's this defensive stopper, and we get a good draw and win a bunch of games in March, and everyone feels great. But it feels like with the whiffs, and they were whiffs, let's not sugarcoat that. We went after some guys and we missed them for a variety of reasons. It feels like that, you know, this is maybe the lowest floor for a Seminole basketball team that we've really seen, you know, maybe since before Jonathan Isaac was here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the flip side of that is the ceiling is still plenty high. You mentioned some things that could go well that would really elevate that ceiling. So I don't think that the ceiling has changed that much from, you know, recent teams. Obviously down from the team from a couple of years ago, but the floor for sure, you know, it feels like, you know, this is going to be kind of a thin team. You know, there's really only about eight guys who are going to be worthy of getting a bunch of minutes, unless somebody really surprises us. And, you know, when you're dealing with that, you know, kind of lack of depth, you know, a few things go wrong and, you know, suddenly that floor is, you know, coming screaming up at you pretty hard.
And you mentioned eight guys. I think obviously Malik Osborne and Anthony Polite are going to be two guys who are heavily relied upon by this team. And if either one of them suffers, you know, a 5-6 game injury, that could be disastrous. And if both of them did, geez. But, you know, so set those aside and knock on wood for their health. Who are maybe the other six, maybe seven that we'll really be relying on? Are we talking about, I feel like Wyatt has his kind of niche role for sure. He's going to come in and play his part, which is be in the right position on defense, make some hustle plays, shoot the ball well, particularly at home, you know, probably have a game or two where he makes 5 or 6 threes. And so what about the other, what are we talking about the other five? Is it, you mentioned Mills, is it the freshman? What do we expect from a Tenor? Like, are those the guys?
Yeah, I would think that Mills and Polite are kind of battle each other for the, who plays the most minutes for the year. You know, both of those guys are going to be on the floor a ton. There's going to be a battle between McLeod and Ingham on, you know, who's really taken control of that center position. You know, you described Wilkes' game pretty good, and Evans and Osborne, you know, those guys are all known quantities. And then the freshmen, Cleveland and Worley, are certainly going to play. But, you know, how much is the wild cards are sort of, how much is John Butler going to play? How much is Cameron Fletcher going to play? If we get some serious contribution out of guys like that, then, you know, everybody should be dancing in the streets, and, you know, because they're here to develop. I think that Worley and Cleveland are pretty much, you know, ready to go. Unfortunately, Cleveland, you know, broke his toe in one of the early workouts, so he's hampered a little bit now, but he and Worley will be the two freshmen who are, you know, really ready to go.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Cleveland, I think for Worley, I expect to make a good contribution. I don't know if from game one, it's just hard coming in. And I mean, we see it every year in college basketball where point guards just take a little while to kind of get their rhythm and adjust to the speed and the physicality of college basketball. Cleveland's body, he's already physical, and sort of his game seems tailor-made for a nice pace and space system. So I expect him, assuming he's healthy, to come in and, you know, make some impressive contributions and some highlight plays off the top. Fletcher seems like maybe a guy that could be kind of a fulcrum here. Like if Fletcher gives us something that is beyond expectations, maybe he is that thing that pushes, you know, that raises Florida State's floor. You know, it's interesting if he was just a freshman coming in, if all you knew about him was that he was a 4-star, let's say, you know, somewhere ranked between 50 and 75, and that he had been coveted by, you know, the standard suite of teams of Tennessee and Florida State and Louisville and, you know, Texas, would, would your opinion be different of him? Or, you know, is it almost hurting us that we kind of have seen him play a year at Kentucky? Or, I mean, is he a guy that with, once he gets into the system, just his athleticism, he can come in and get offensive rebounds, run the court, get lobs and play defense?
Yeah, he was expected, you know, to play more at Kentucky. And I think he started, you know, their first two games or maybe one of those first two games. You know, so it's clearly more was expected of him at Kentucky. I'm not sure exactly what happened off the court, you know, which dictated some of it. And then, you know, clearly he just wasn't ready, but he's a, you know, athletic freak and can certainly contribute if he comes in and learns the defense and, you know, learns how to run different motion, you know, sets that Ham likes to run. He can certainly play some, but he's not going to be this guy that comes in and just, you know, is suddenly averaging 10 or 11 points a game. It's just, he's just not that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That I think that I would agree with that. I think honestly, the non-conference season is going to be really big for him. And something that guys like Scotty Barnes didn't get last year was that chance to really hone in get some confidence. Not that Scotty needed any confidence, but get used to the system in the non-conference in some games that frankly Florida State should win by 20 and sort of see what you've got before the conference season really starts. So I think that it's going to be really key for someone like Cameron Fletcher and even Caleb Mills to be healthy in September and October, get some 15, 20 minutes in during those games against North Florida or whomever we play early on. Here's a question for you. Forget Scotty Barnes, because there's just no way that he would have come back for a second year. But of all the other players that we lost in the offseason, so that would include the three guys who made themselves eligible to turn pro, which is Raekwon Gray, Bolsa Kobravica, MJ Walker. That would include Sadar Calhoun. And we'll even put Nate Jack into this conversation just because, you know, he was a player and we lost him. If you could have picked one guy to stay, just you get one. And thinking about now that we did whiff on some of those players' transfers and who we have currently and constructed in our roster, which of those guys would you have brought in or kept, I should say?
Yeah, I'd take Gray, no question. I would have kept Gray, absolutely. He was the best player on the floor for the last probably half of the season. He would have been primed for a huge senior year. I think if Gray's off the table and I can't take him, then, you know, it's probably got to be Balsha. He's kind of starting to show the ability to dominate games. You know, he'd flash every now and again, but, you know, he's certainly better than the position that we have now. And, you know, someone like MJ Walker, he was a hell of a player, but we've got a lot of guys who can fill that role, you know, in the Gray and Balsha conversation. We just don't have guys that can fill that role of what they were doing. And then we also lost Sadar Calhoun. Can't forget that, you know, over at Texas Tech now, not that I'm picking him, just pointing it out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's, and to your point though, I think it's what I hear you saying is the value above replacement. And I think that, you know, we have a guy that can do a lot of what Sadar Calhoun brought to the table. You know, Cleveland can probably do some of that. Caleb Mills, a shorter version. You know, who knows, maybe even Cameron Fletcher can be some of that athletic kind of go and get the ball above the rim guy that Calhoun flashed at times. So it's good to see him land at Texas Tech over there with, what is it, Corey Williams, I believe, former assistant. Yep. At mm-hmm. Florida State. So hopefully he can, you know, see a little bit more success in their system. I agree with you that the answer has to be Gray, given just every, like you said, for most of the back half of the year, he was the best player on the team. And I think that he really would have brought something, you know, different and unique to our roster this year. And of course, Balsa agree with his value above who we have left being higher than what MJ's value is above what we have left at shooting guard, which kind of brings me, we'll talk about Gray in just a second and all those guys for the pros. But when you look at roster construction, that's a good point, right? Like, we're not too upset about losing MJ. First of all, he was here 4 years, did a great job. Always will. I mean, he was part of some fantastic ball games and some super successful teams. you know, so salute to MJ for all that he did for Florida State basketball. And we still have a lot of big guards to fill his spots, right? It feels like we've kind of really entrenched ourselves into this big guard personality and mantra. It feels though the rest of the roster is kind of like, I don't know, we're missing that 6'8" kind of ball handler that maybe a Scotty or a Gray or a Patrick Williams was. We don't have that like just dominating rim protecting presence maybe that we had with like a Kamaji or even a Bernard James. It just feels like I'm not sure where we're going with the rest of the roster.
Yeah, I think that second position you mentioned, you know, the 6'8" guy who can handle the ball and do a lot of, you know, that's kind of it's becoming more common, but it's still a little bit of a unicorn position. Like we happen to have Gray and Barnes on the team at the same time, but that's just not going to happen all that often. You know, we tried to turn Kofor into more of a ball handler and he just wasn't. You know, we've tried to turn Malik into more of a ball handler and he's not. It's just a really tough position to fill, but you know, with areas, if you were to break recruiting down into like point guards, wings, and bigs, you know, we've done really good on wings. Like we are attracting every top 50 wing in the nation is coming and looking at Florida State, but we're still not landing, you know, that elite point guard or those elite big men. And, you know, if you know, we were able to put a recruiting class together where we got all three of those things, you know, then we're talking about a, you know, maybe the best team in Florida State history. Cause you know, even our best teams we're trying to cover up some, you know, some pretty glaring holes, and the coaching staff has done a really wonderful job doing that. But you know, this team's going to be no different.
Yeah, it is. You are right about, you know, I mean, Worley is a pretty good point guard, of course, probably the best that we've had under Hamilton, although even he is still not in that kind of top three or four echelon point guard. We'll talk later in this podcast. That could change this year with one particular guy out there who is high on Florida State. But you're right in that we've kind of really been the wings is what we're both putting into the NBA. And maybe it becomes a self-fulfilling cycle. Like, you know, they see us putting guys into the NBA. So then better guys want to come here, which they're naturally going to be better fit for the NBA. So it kind of keeps the cycle going. I don't even know what to make of the big men at this point. It just seems like that, you know, I don't know if it's something with the way we're pitching the system, or if it's just something in the types of attributes that we look for a big man to be able to both be laterally quick out on the perimeter, but, you know, and also get back and protect the rim. And maybe those guys are just difficult to find. And when they do exist, they go to Gonzaga or Duke, but I don't know. I don't even know. It seems like now at this point, we're just, you know, bringing in guys like Ballard and hoping they develop.
Yeah. If Ham can find like a really athletic 8-footer who started playing basketball about 15 minutes before the end of his senior year in high school, then that's the guy that we're recruiting. You know, we're just not landing the, you know, the sort of elite guys, like you said, are going to Gonzaga and other places.
Yeah. And Efton Reed felt like that was, it was interesting I wrote an article about him, and Efton Reed, you know, isn't your typical Hamilton big recruit. He's not uber athletic. He doesn't have an above the rim game. He is a skilled rebounder and skilled kind of back to the basket guy. And, you know, I don't know. It did look like for a bit there that we might actually land him. And it was interesting to me that, you know, that was going to be such a unique pivot away from what we typically have had on the roster. Ultimately, you know, he postponed his decision. You know, of course, we can talk about all kinds of different factors that play into that with parents and strong ass offers from other coaches. But, you know, he didn't come. And so the bottom line is we're left with, you know, hoping that a guy like McLeod or Tenor can take that next step. Why don't we, speaking of next step, I think we'll come back and talk about the guys who are taking the next step in their career to the NBA. But first, we'll take a quick break. All right. So we just kind of talked about the off season and the series of losses and additions and recruitments and transfers and everything that was for Florida State. And part of that offseason was a handful of guys who decided to make themselves eligible to start being paid, not just for their name, image, and likeness, but for their actual contracted skills, contractual skills on the basketball court. And they are going to play professional. So, we got the NBA draft coming up on Thursday, the 29th. And Michael, do we want to flip this around and maybe you be the moderator and ask me some questions?
Sure. Yeah, that's a nice way of saying I don't know anything about the draft, so I'll be the person who asks the questions.
Does that mean I don't know anything about all the other stuff that I ask about?
No, you're just a natural. You're bringing all kinds of skills to the court here. I do know that Florida State's going to have the highest chosen ACC player for the second year in a row. I think we might have even had the top two last year. Let's start with Scotty Barnes. I've seen a lot of talk about Scotty going fifth to the Orlando Magic. Is that going to happen? Where would you put your money on him right now?
I think him going fifth to the Orlando Magic would be as good a bet as any. If, you know, in January, it felt very much like this was a five player. This draft, first of all, is loaded, and teams have known this for a long time. Teams like the Oklahoma City Thunder and a variety of others have been, but particularly the Thunder and Houston Rockets, they've been acquiring picks in this draft, hoping to get multiple chances at a draft that is, you know, probably three or four guys in this draft would have gone number one in last year's draft, despite how good several of the prospects, you know, LaMelo Ball and whatnot were in last year's draft. Three or four guys probably would have gone number one last year. So it is a loaded draft. And for a long time, it felt like there was an entrenched five, and Scotty Barnes was not among those five. You've got Cade Cunningham, who Scotty backed up in high school. And then you've got Jalen Green, who didn't play in college. Jalen Suggs hit their memorable shot for Gonzaga in the Final Four. Evan Mobley at USC and Jonathan Kuminga, who is one of these like 6'8", big wings, ball handler guy that we were talking about, so unique. But he's also pretty raw and still has a ways to go in his skill development. And as Scotty, two things happened. Scotty continued to showcase at least a little bit better free throw shooting, and the NBA really free throw shooting is perhaps the biggest indicator of can someone eventually become a better three-point shooter, not necessarily Steph Curry, but can they improve their three-point stroke? Oftentimes they look to the free throw line, and he did over the second half of the year demonstrate better technique, better mechanics. And it was clear that Stan Jones was, you know, turning Scotty into a better free throw shooter. And so I think that helped him. And then really Jonathan Kuminga ended up getting injured in the G League year. He didn't finish out with the playoff with his team that made the playoffs. And he's kind of dropped back a little bit. And when they had the combine process, Scotty just measured out so well. You know, you see some of these guys on TV and they really didn't get a chance to scout a lot of players in person this year. And you're not quite sure what their measurements are, but you get all of them together in one room and you can really see that. I mean, his arms just go on for days and he's thick. He's physical. He does have those playmaking skills. He's got a fiery personality. He's not Andrew Wiggins. He's not going to just be content to just let other people kind of do the heavy lifting for him. So I think that process really helped him. It doesn't hurt that Florida State basketball players have been generated. You know, they are now becoming a known quantity to the NBA scout. They know they're going to come in prepared to play switching defense, prepared to have a high basketball IQ, make contributions all over the court. We've seen early success with guys like Patrick Williams and Terrence Mann. So even Trent Forrest had some run with the Jazz last year. So all that is a long way of saying that Scotty Barnes has definitely elevated himself into the conversation to be maybe instead of the 5-10 range or 5-12 range, more like the 4-8 range. And in that 4-8 range, it would seem that the Magic are as good a fit as anyone for him. I think the Golden State Warriors at 7 would really love to get Scotty Barnes and kind of turn him into a Draymond 2.0. I don't know that Scotty is going to fall all the way to at 7 at this point. So what you could see is someone trade up above the Magic and grab him at 4 if Toronto is not satisfied with who falls to them at 4.
So So we've got Scotty going fourth or fifth. If he falls below that, make sure you send your tweets to Matt, even though he's not on Twitter.
How about if he falls below seventh, you can send your tweets to Matt.
So speaking of guys who are going to fall below seventh, what about, you know, we've seen some success with guys like Terrence Mann, that either are undrafted or drafted lower in the draft. We had some guys last year, Balsha comes to mind, and Raekwon Gray, MJ Walker, like those guys are all, you know, some have been working out, you know, so some haven't, but is there any realistic shot that any of those guys get drafted, or, you know, end up signing some kind of post-draft deal?
I think all of them will end up signing some type of post-draft deal. I don't know that all of them will sign a post-draft deal with an NBA or NBA G League team, only because Bolsha is, you know, from Europe, and he just may want, if he doesn't get drafted, he just may want to go home and play in Europe and be around his family for the first, you know, time in a few years. So he may just choose to do that. I would imagine that MJ Walker is not drafted. It would be pretty surprising to, I mean, we're not quite talking like Ryan Reed level surprise when his name was called shockingly in the last few picks of the draft, but it would be pretty surprising if MJ Walker was drafted. There's just too many 6'4" guys who can shoot the three and defend fairly well. Now, I do think that, you know, he's been working out for teams. I think they see him as a guy that can, you know, hey, let's give him a shot on the G League, and there's two-way contracts, and, you know, maybe he gets his way onto some 10-day contracts somewhere and proves himself. Every year we see guys like Malcolm Brogdon, who was a second round pick, and quite a Fred Van Fleet for the Raptors. He's really blossomed. And so there are certainly guys that just, you know, not worth spending a draft pick on, but they can come in and prove themselves. And then you've got Gray, who I think, you know, probably before the combine, I would have said he should be a top 45 pick. The combine actually wasn't great for him. I don't know what teams expected. He came in at 17% body fat. I mean, that's who he is. He's a big guy with a big backside, and you know, he's never going to be thin. But what he is quick, both laterally and with his hands, and very high defensive IQ, and is an underrated playmaker in my opinion. So I think at this point, Gray is probably 50-50 to be drafted. The combine was not excellent for him. But I do think that he will eventually hear his name called somewhere maybe in the 50s. And if he doesn't, it might be because he has had a workout with a team. Sometimes what happens is a team falls in love with a guy and they think that they're just trying to not talk about him a lot. And they're hoping that they can bring him in and the player is okay with being brought in as a free agent, because then you can actually kind of dictate where you go and get to your second contract quicker. So I that could be the case, but I still would be mildly surprised if Gray doesn't hear his name called sometime in the second half, the second round, which would be a good spot for him. And I imagine you would see him playing NBA minutes within two seasons.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people saying that it's better not to get drafted than to go in the second round. But if you're a player, you've been waiting to hear your name called in the NBA draft your whole life, I'm sure hearing it called in the second round is, you know, it's a pretty, pretty thrilling thing. The last question I have before we wrap up the NBA conversation. So we've got Patrick Williams, who came in one and done, was the fourth pick. We've got Scotty, you know, is going to be probably top seven pick this year, one and done. Is that kind of the new thing at Florida State? I mean, is that going to happen again this year? Is John Butler going to turn into the next Evan Mobley, or maybe Cleveland turns into Chris Duarte? Like what's going on there? And are we going to, should that be something that the fans are kind of bracing for this year?
I don't know about John Butler turning into the next Mobley, although, you know, back to our conversation of if that happens, I think the ceiling is pretty high, maybe higher than everybody except Gonzaga. But yeah, I mean, yeah. So just going Scotty Barnes is going to be the third lotto pick for Florida State in the last 3 years, with Vassell, who only played 2 years at Florida. Wasn't even a top 200 recruit, only played 2 years and was a lotto pick. And then you don't have to go back much further than him to get, Jonathan Isaac as a lotto pick, as a one and done. And we know Malik Beasley also was not a lotto pick, but one and done. I do think that Florida State fans should expect another one and done player this year. I would imagine that Cleveland is going to be a first round pick, and maybe he's like the Beasley kind that, you know, gets picked 18th instead of fifth. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a lot of money and a great, sometimes you end up in a better situation with a team picking down there. But, you know, he could also have the kind of year that Pat Williams had. People thought Pat Williams was going to be 29, 30 going into the draft. And you get to the combine, and again, you just see the size of these guys and how laterally quick they are and athletic they are. And a lot of Florida State guys just rocket up the draft board. So, you know, wouldn't be shocking if Matt Cleveland turns into another lotto pick, one and done guy, third year in a row. Wouldn't be completely shocking if Jalen Worley, if Florida State were to reach that ceiling, it's probably going to be because a guy like Jalen Worley really takes it to the next level. So I suppose there's a world in which he is drafted high as well. But I personally think that he is better coming out after his sophomore or junior year. And that would also be great for Florida State, although he should not, he should always take his own professional interest first. But then you look at the recruits, and maybe that's where the conversation could head next. Yeah, I absolutely think that if Matt Cleveland goes one and done this year, my assumption would be that coming in with the 2022 guys, there would be another, you know, legit possibility of a one and done the next year. So what if that happened, you'd be 4 years in a row. And at that point, I think that's just kind of the established pattern.
Yeah, and I don't think that fans can really, you know, complain about that too much based on the results that we've had. So,
no,
I think I will kick it back over to you to ask some questions. I'm a little uncomfortable on this end of the mic, you know. So
yeah, let's get into that 2022 recruit. Let's say that Matt Cleveland displays all of the athleticism of Pat Williams and all of the shooting prowess of Devin Vassell. That would be a heck of a season. And let's say he comes out and is a top 8 pick next year. We are obviously going to be in the need for reloading with some more talent. We'll also, you know, I think there's a decent chance we could lose Anthony Polite, even though he would have another year left. At that point, he's graduated. He's 23, 24 years old. We actually have 3 scholarships open on the team right now. So that would be 5. And sure, there's always going to be a transfer here and there. So it looks like we would have 5-6 scholarships available at a minimum for next year. What are we looking at? I mean, I hear some pretty talented names, as you mentioned. There's a lot of wings and people who want to come here. Let's talk about them.
Yeah, I think the season that we're in right now for recruiting is every top 50 wing in the country is somewhat interested in Florida State, and we've got a few of them to visit campus, which you can do now these days, which is kind of nice. We're also going to see these guys kind of blow up, and you know, with the blue bloods, and so trying to lure one of our top targets away from Kentucky or Gonzaga or North Carolina is it's going to be tough. It's always tough, but we got a lot of guys, you know, that are looking at Florida State. I think, you know, the one that's been on everybody's mind the longest is Derek Whitehead down from Montverde, who's the, you know, fifth or sixth rated recruit in the country and visited back in June. But there's been some other big visits as well. You know, a couple of guys from South Carolina, you know, we added Coach Smith to the staff a couple of years ago and that is paying off. We've got Julian Phillips and Jazion Gortman from South Carolina have both visited. And then we also had Dylan Mitchell, who's a Florida kid, you know, another, you know, top 30, you know, big guard U type player. So there's plenty of interest, but you know, the trick is landing one of these guys early in the process, which is not easy to do.
Yeah, and ironically enough, the guy that we landed early in the process last year, Bryce McGowans, who very well could be a one and done himself out of Nebraska, didn't stick, which is a bit rare in college basketball. Weird circumstance with his brother transferring to the school he ended up at. But even though he didn't stick, it was still really important, I think, last year to get him committed. And that kind of opened the, you know, then you saw Cleveland and Worley follow suit. And even though McGowans didn't stay, you know, it still, I think, helped out. So who are some of these names? I know Whitehead has been building relationships with the Florida State staff for a long time, multiple years here. And he's somebody that, you know, hey, 4 months ago, maybe was considered a lean to Florida State. And I know he's ranked fifth or sixth, but honestly, man, looking at his film, I think he could be, you know, the second or third best player in high school basketball. But it seems like a lot of crystal balls for Duke lately. Is that just a case of you know, kind of like Grayson Allen, like the one school that could have swayed that kid comes in late in the process and just takes him?
Yeah, I think ironically with Coach K leaving, you know, it kind of creates a little bit of momentum for Duke. You know, you get to come in and be, you know, the first class that like carries on the Duke tradition without Coach K. You know, the coaching staff is, you know, probably going to stay pretty intact. You know, they're still Duke. They're still going to bring in a ton of guys and a guy like, you know, Whitehead can go anywhere he wants in the country and he's going to be one and done and, you know, playing in kind of an up and down system like Duke has, you know, Florida State does as well, but whatever, you know, Whitehead is going to get plenty of chances to, you know, kind of show his prowess.
It's interesting though, that it's not like Duke is, Jalen Johnson went to, you know, back on the previous subject, he went to Duke as widely considered third, fourth best prospect in the country last year, big wing, whatever. He didn't make it through the season and he has slid possibly all the way out of the lottery. And it's not like that's a one-time thing. I'm blanking on his name right now, but the guy, Patrick Williams, was actually the second rated player in North Carolina the year he came out, with the better guy going to Duke. And he is still at Duke now. Patrick Williams is going to be in his second year in the NBA next year. So they have not been, I don't know, like, I don't want to say they haven't been developing talent, but it's been since that Zion class that people have really maybe elevated their draft profile at Duke.
Yeah. You know, Zion was the last guy that was drafted prior to a Florida State player. And, you know, you just can't have that kind of thing happening at Duke. I personally will be a little surprised if, you know, that doesn't get turned around. I think another thing that's maybe hurting Duke a little bit is you've got the emergence of some other teams, you know, LSU, Illinois, maybe even like Arkansas and UConn that are, you know, they're kind of, you know, kind of starting Ohio State, you know, just landing a ton of guys that are competing, you know, for those highest level teams. And so I think the talent is getting a little more widely distributed these days, which has hurt Duke a little bit. And then they've totally committed to some guys who it was bad scouting on their part.
Yeah. Yeah. Their last year's class just was not very good. I'm not even sure other than Jalen Johnson, they have a first rounder out of that class. But at any rate, I do think Whitehead, whether he goes to Duke or Florida, I mean, he is the kind of, I've seen him. He is the physical multi-level scorer. That kid is going to be successful and will be a lotto pick. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about point guard and trying to land a big time point guard. I have to say that Jay Gort, which is what Jayzeon Gortman kind of goes by, Jay Gort, and he's out of South Carolina. Steve Smith has a great relationship there. Florida State isn't a good place, but I mean, that kid to me looks like a 6'1 version of LaMarcus Joyner. And he's not, you know, he actually isn't like kind of big guard you in the sense that he's probably, you know, six feet maybe, if we're being honest, and 165 pounds, but his arms are so long, like LaMarcus Joyner's, and he is just so quick and athletic. And beyond that, he is just tough. He gets after it on both sides of the court. And I honestly think he, you know, Sky Clark was someone I was really high on. He ended up at Kentucky. I like his game a lot. I think Jay Gort could be the best guard. I don't know about true point guard, but the best guard prospect in the country for college basketball this coming year, coming out of recruiting class. Have you seen him play, Michael? And, you know, otherwise, what do you think of our chances there?
Yeah, I've seen his highlights, and he's certainly a hell of a player. And it's nice to see Florida State recruiting. I mean, you listed him at 165. Yeah, I'd probably take the under on that. He's not a big kid, and it's great to see Florida State kind of recruiting guys that don't fit just a single mold. The bad part of it is that everybody in the country wants him. I mean, he's getting recruited by everybody. So he's getting a ton of attention. He's going to have to cut that list down. He loved Florida State. You know, he commented that it Tallahassee felt a lot like Columbia, where he's from, you know, so it just kind of felt like home, which is always a good sign. You know, you want these kids to feel comfortable when they leave. So, you know, if we could land someone like him, it would not only, you know, send waves through the recruiting world just because, you know, we're landing another top 10 guy, but it's also just a different style of guy. You know, it's, you kind of expect it to be the Matthew Cleveland, you know, 6'6", 190 big wing guy that we're landing, but this would be a little bit of a game changer.
Yeah, it really would. It feels like the kind of guy who would typically, maybe end up at UNC or maybe even a Texas or a USC or something. I mean, and he's a guy that really has shot up the recruiting rankings. I don't even know if he was in the top 40 12 or 15 months ago, but he is a relentless competitor, and his athleticism jumps off the screen. So he's a guy to get really excited about if Florida State is able to reel him in. And, you know, we're in as good a position as anybody is there. But to your point, when you start being in the conversation for best guard in high school basketball, you have a lot of big time programs who are showering attention your way. You mentioned a couple other names earlier, Dylan Mitchell. I know Julian Phillips, the guy who actually, I think, plays with Jay Gort either on the AAU circuit or has played with him. I know sometimes they change teams here and there. I think both of those would be tremendous adds. There's another name I'll bring out there too. Is it Derek Lively? He's the guy that Worley's went to the same high school as Worley. I know a lot of folks peg him for Kentucky, but I think he's someone that has at least been on FSU's radar, especially since we signed his teammate last year.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of that. You know, I mentioned that in the beginning. You know, guys like Derek Lively. He's a we're gonna see interest from a lot of those people, but you know, are we really going to be able to sway him from like Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, which I think are probably his top three right now. You know, but again, he's a guy, 7'1". He's 220. He would be that elite center that we just haven't really landed, you know, in the past. And again, a guy who would just be a complete game changer in terms of our recruiting.
It's tough though. You know, you don't want to not go at, you never make a shot you don't take. But at the same time, you know, you put eggs in basket like that. You go after the Efton Reeds, you go after the Musa Cissés 2 years ago. And it would be really nice right now to have a Josh Minot or Josh Gray from up in Wisconsin, like some, you know, maybe a James White from the Atlanta area on the roster. Like it would be not, you know, and you have to make these trade-offs. We're clearly landing some of these five stars. So I would have thought we actually would have never landed Jalen Worley, and we did. So I'm not suggesting I don't want us going after these guys, but it's tough sometimes when, to your point, are we really going to get Lively away from Kentucky or Duke? I don't know.
Yeah. I think Coach Young, CY, he kind of feels like Florida State can land anybody and it's to our detriment sometimes, but it also, you know, certainly works out in a few cases.
Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting to follow, and maybe worth, maybe it won't be 3 months since we have our, till we have our next pod. Cause my hope is that one of these guys in the next, we'll call it, you know, 3 to 4 weeks pops for Florida State, and we can be back on here evaluating what that means for the class and the rosters moving forward. But for now, before we wrap things up, I, you know, it is the off season, and what some folks may not know about Michael and I is that we both follow golf enthusiastically. I enjoy it for sure. And Michael really, really follows it, particularly, you know, in terms of his knowledge of the Florida State alum who are playing professional golf, not just at the PGA level, but at other levels as well. And so given that this is sort of the, you know, we've just had the Open Championship over in England, and now the FedEx Cup is going to be coming up here in a couple of weeks. And really Florida State continues to be just well represented on both the professional, the PGA Tour and other tours. You know, something that we could mix in here a little bit more is some golf talk. So Michael, everybody, let's start with the two people who everybody knows, Brooks Koepka and Daniel Berger. Both of them have seen, you know, they've contended in, they at least contended in the sense of top tens and majors this year. They've both been playing pretty good golf for quite a few months, and they're locks for sure to make the FedEx Cup. Anything, I mean, could either one of those guys win the FedEx Cup?
The way that the FedEx Cup is set up, you know, you anybody can win it, you know, especially if you're starting the playoff run and like the top 50 or so. It's a three tournament deal. Koepka is, you know, he's got the reputation for showing up in majors and really not showing up for that much more. And Berger is probably playing about as well as anybody in the country since, you know, in the last 6 months or so. So, you know, it could certainly happen, but the real, you know, value of the FedEx Cup is that it's like golf's way of distributing money to the top players, you know, because they don't get appearance fees for showing up, you know, at tournaments the same way that like tennis players do. So you got to have a way to funnel money to the top players, and that's pretty much what the playoffs are for. And so Koepka and Berger, even if they don't win the $10 million for the whole thing, they are certainly going to be walking away with plenty of money out of this thing.
Good for them. Good for them. And yeah, Berger rather has been playing some good golf, and Koepka really did, you know, and sometimes I wonder, is he just not showing up for the other majors? You know, does he not, is it a care thing? But you are not for the other majors, for the other tournaments. You are spot on about the majors. I know we were talking, Josh, for those of you who know Josh Pick from a lot of articles, he does recruiting articles with Tomahawk Nation. He also follows golf extremely closely. And we were talking on Slack the other day, and, you know, Brooks Koepka's got 10 top 10s in the last 13 majors he's participated in. So, I mean, it's almost like a sure thing if you want to go down to your, you know, your local casino or bookie and bet him to finish top 10 in a major. And he has won. He won another tournament this year. It was, I guess, way back in the beginning of the year. But you're right. Is that just a care thing? He shows up when the lights are bright and then kind of works on his game the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think that's also a little bit more of the image that he's cultivated. Nobody plays golf as well as he does without practicing a lot. You know, he finished second at the PGA, fourth at the US Open, sixth at the Open. And, you know, he missed the cut at the Masters, but he could barely walk. And so he's been dealing with some injury issues. And I think if he gets healthy, then, you know, you should probably be betting him to take home, you know, at least one major next year.
All right. So if Scotty doesn't go top seven, you can blame me. And if you put your bets on Brooks Koepka winning a major next year and he doesn't, you can blame Michael. Let's get to maybe some of the other golfers, though, because, you know, while those two are clearly going to be making a lot of money coming up in this FedEx Cup, we've got a few golfers, FSU alum, who are really fighting to make the FedEx Cup. And one of them, Hank Lebioda, he just has had a stretch. He had a 1 month stretch there, maybe where he made more money in a month than he had made in the rest of his PGA career combined, or professional golf career combined.
Yeah, he turned it on at the right moment. He was struggling to get inside the top 125, which is where you got to be to get your, you know, keep your card for next year. And I think he was 139th, and then he finished 5th, 4th, 8th, you know, in three consecutive weeks. And he was playing, he's playing well again this week, but he had to withdraw, unfortunately. But he is, he's locked up his card for next year. And the thing, if you don't follow golf, the thing that that does is that it allows you to sort of pick the your schedule, lay it out for the whole year, because players all have a priority ranking, and that's how you get into tournaments, is how, you know, how high your priority is. So just being in the one top 125 means that he gets to, you know, kind of set his schedule for next year, which is a huge deal, you know. And then on the other side of that bubble is Chase Seifert, who, you know, he's been a pro for a long time. He finally made it out on the PGA Tour, and now he is right on the cut line of whether or not he's going to be able to keep his card. I think he's going to be about 130th after this week's tournament, and you got to be in the top 125. And so he's going to have to go back to the Korn Ferry Tour, which is the, you know, the biggest of the minor leagues. And he'll have a it's a three or four tournament kind of playoff to get into the top 25, to get back onto the PGA Tour, you know. Otherwise he'll be kind of, you know, just playing wherever he can next year.
And when you say wherever you can, that means just wherever you can get, you can what, pay your own way in, or get a sponsor's exemption, or just, you know, petition to get in and hope that you make the cut.
Yeah, it's crazy complicated the way the priority rankings work, but he would probably get into maybe 10 PGA Tour events, and then he would have full status on the Korn Ferry Tour. So he would be kind of mixing it up between the, you know, like the AAA of the minor leagues, and, you know, getting into the lowest PGA Tour events.
So like those NBA players, you know, like a Trent Forrest that was on a two-way contract where he's playing both in the G League and the NBA. But the difference here being that you can only make, in order to, it's easier to keep your card when you're able to play more PGA Tour events. And if you can only play 10, right? So then what, those 10 become very important. Is that,
and the pressure really racks up, because you, it doesn't matter if you play one tournament or 40, you still got to finish in the top 125 to be able to you know, lock up your status for next year. So he's got a ton of pressure on him right now.
So, you know, you mentioned he was about 130. Is this the last week that he could finish in that 125, or is there another week or two for him to, you know, bust out with a top 20 finish?
Yeah, he's got two more weeks. So there's two events that he's going to be able to play in, and one event that he's not going to be able to play in. So he'll have two more tournaments to be able to try to make that cut.
All right. So if anyone out there is interested in watching some of the next two golf tournaments over the next few weekends, and root for an FSU alum who needs to perform well to just get into that, inside that 125, Chase Seifert could use your support. And then maybe to a couple other guys, we've got Vincent Norman and John Pack. Vincent Norman over in the European Tour, and then John Pack, who just graduated Florida State and, of course, had a very illustrious college career, but it's been a bit of a rocky start, where Vincent's actually performing really well over on the European Tour. John's having a little bit of a struggle transitioning into his first few professional events.
Yeah, Norman and Pack were sort of the rocks of this year's Florida State golf team. Got them to sort of unprecedented heights. You know, they weren't able to win at all, but they had a hell of a season. So now they've both gone pro in their own ways, and one is succeeding and one's not. Pack has played like six events on the PGA Tour and not made a single cut. He's getting into these events by sponsors exemption. So the top college players, they save four spots in every tournament, and generally those sponsors exemptions kind of go to the top college players this time of year. You know, interesting enough, he had full status on the Korn Ferry Tour and could have tried to play his way that way, and he chose not to. He chose to play through sponsors exemptions on the PGA Tour. It's not looking like a very good decision at this point. But he also he'll have basically one event, you know, left on the PGA Tour and probably one on the Korn Ferry Tour, which is not enough to get it done unless he, you know, somehow
wins one.
Yeah. And then Vincent Norman, he's a Swedish golfer who transferred to Florida State, and he somehow ended up at Division II, even though he was like this total stud amateur from Sweden. finishes up his career at Florida State, goes over to the European Tour, and he has two top 10 finishes in 3 weeks. And you know, he's making a boatload of money. He's having great success, and you know, good for him. And who knows, you never know with these guys from European countries, if the European Tour is where he wants to be, or if he wants to try to, you know, use that as a springboard to get on the PGA Tour, where you make a lot more money.
That's right. And we've seen examples of both recently. There's some great golf played over in Europe. Guys like Tommy Fleetwood and stuff have had some real success over on the European Tour, and Vincent Norman can certainly carve out a great career there. We've also seen our own Brooks Koepka that kind of went over there and honed his game and grinded and worked hard over in Europe in a variety of different courses and elements and weather. And, you know, he used that as a springboard to then come over to the PGA Tour. And you know, a lot of other guys do that as well. So it really interesting to follow Norman's career path there. And it's good to see guys like Hank, again, you mentioned he had to withdraw. Hope everything is okay there. We're sending good thoughts out to Hank for that one. But, you know, it's great to be able to follow the careers of some of the guys not right at the top, like Brooks and Daniel Berger and some of the Normans and Seiferts and Lebiotas. And hopefully John, too, can get it rolling a bit and kind of get some of that mojo back.
Yeah, and then we got a mix of another like seven or eight guys who are in the, you know, further down in the minors, and you know, hopefully some of those guys can kind of work their way up and you know, get onto these tours where you can make some life-changing money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, buddy, it's been good talking to you, good catching up. We're right here almost pushing an hour, not quite. And so I think that this is a great place to end it, but yeah, as we'll be back, it won't be a couple months for sure. We'll be back hopefully to talk some recruiting soon. And if nothing else, maybe to give some more off season updates as we get closer to the basketball season. For Michael, I'm Matt, signing off.